kids or grandkids their risk of myopia progression and what can be done about it. And what a segue into the next question. Can we do something about it? My answer is, I know, yes. But what do we do about this? And how can we actually affect this? I mean, isn't it just genetics? It's like it is what it is. It's going to be.
All right, guys. Last week, we talked with Dr. Gary Gerber about the myopia epidemic. Remember, myopia means nearsighted, or you can see close up and things in the distance seem really blurry. On this episode, we talk with Dr. Amy Jacobs, and we talk about issues causing myopia and why you should want to know more.
From the in-office studios of his eye care practices in Nashville, Tennessee, it's As I See It with Dr. Jeff Kegaris, your source for eye care education and receiving the type of patient relationship you deserve. It is time for a patient revolution. And now, your host, Dr. Jeff Kegaris.
Welcome back to another edition of As I See It. I'm Dr. Jeff Kegaris, coming to you live from Cool Springs Eye Care in Franklin, Tennessee, our home and beautiful place to live. And today, you know, I'm frequently asked the question in the exam room, now, wait, am I nearsighted? Am I farsighted? So let's kind of clarify that. If you can see well up close when you don't have your glasses on, but you can't see far away, then you have sight at near. That makes you nearsighted. We call that myopia. That's the fancy medical term for it. We didn't really need to see so much up close until this guy Gutenberg invented the printing press in about 1440 and then started printing Bibles. And all of a sudden, the ability to transfer knowledge through the written word and a small written word was especially necessary. So, that event plus, needing to read increased the prevalence of nearsightedness. It's like genetically the body started to adapt to a new need. Evolution? Perhaps. The digital age in the 1980s and the 1990s and the advent of iPhones equals evolution gone wild. We're on track for one out of every two people that you see being myopic, nearsighted, by 2050. I want to know more. I want to know why, and I want to know what we're doing about it. Now, you've heard me talk to Dr. Gary Gerber, the founder and president of Treehouse Eyes, on a national basis and on an international basis. What's going on? What are some of the theories? But today, I'm going to talk with our own expert here right at home, Dr. Amy Jacobs, who leads our myopia control program at Cool Springs and Donaldson Eye Care. Amy, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So let's just start again. I briefly touched on what myopia is, but could you kind of maybe give a better definition and tell us what myopia is?
Sure. So like you said, myopia is just that technical term for nearsightedness or the inability to see well far away. You see better up close, you see worse far away. So typically myopia occurs whenever the eye grows too long from front to back, causing light to come to a focus in front of the retina instead of directly on the retina. So this can typically be corrected for with glasses or contact lenses. Whenever you put glasses or contacts on the eye or in front of the eye, that causes those light rays to refocus on the retina again, which is how you see clearly.
And some people can have myopia or nearsightedness, but also astigmatism, right? So it's not like one or the other, it can be both.
No, so you can't be in the same eye, you can't be farsighted and nearsighted, but you can have myopia or nearsightedness with astigmatism or farsightedness with astigmatism.
Okay. All right. So who is at risk for developing myopia?
So there's a couple different ways we can look at this. There are both the biological risk factors, and then there's more environmental risk factors. So to talk about the biological risk factors first, there is if you have a family history of myopia, meaning you have one parent, especially two parents who are also myopic, then you are at greater risk for developing myopia. Ethnicity plays a part. Those of Asian or especially East Asian descent are more at risk. And then also age is something that we look at too. We see a lot more myopic development in children between ages 5 and 9. Whenever we're considering the environmental risk factors, high levels of time spent on near activities, So, you know, scrolling through social media more reading, more video games. Also, where you hold those devices or those near things that you're looking at, the closer that you hold those to you, that causes that's more of a risk factor for developing myopia as well. And then also low amounts of time spent outdoors. Those are all environmental risk factors that are at play. So a lot of times whenever we see children at their comprehensive eye exams, we will kind of look at all of those risk factors and put together what we call a risk profile for them, which helps us to determine if they're not myopic yet, how much risk is there of them becoming myopic in the future? And if they are already myopic, how at risk are they of continuing on that same trend, or how likely are they to progress quickly?
Okay, so kind of like a growth projection of right. Here's where you are, here's where you will be. Mm-hmm. Is that okay, or what do we need to do, right?
Right, exactly.
And we tell a lot of parents that, okay, hey, this is normal. Your child's 4 or 5 years old and they're a little bit farsighted, mm-hmm. but that's a pretty normal thing at that right. point, depending upon how much farsightedness. If it's only a little bit, then they're kind of ahead of the curve, mm-hmm. aren't they? And and for patients that are, maybe they don't wear glasses, or maybe even they do, just as a refresher, if you're looking at a glasses prescription from us or a contact lens prescription, there's always a first number. It's under sphere, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that one would start with a minus or a plus. Which right. one are the myopes?
The myopes are the one with a minus power in front of that number.
Okay, so if you see your child or you look at your prescription and you have a minus there, you are nearsighted, right?
Yes.
All right. So why do we care about this? I mm-hmm. mean, you and I do a pretty good job of correcting people with glasses and contacts and cooperating and taking care of LASIK surgery, mm-hmm. things like that. But it's more than just an inconvenience.
It is. So that's a good question, because a lot of times whenever we see children and they go from being a -2 to a -4 in 1 year, it's sometimes the parents don't understand why that's a concern. Okay, we can change their contacts, we can change their glasses, and they can still see well. Good, see you next year. But there's more to it than that. So higher levels of nearsightedness correlate with a longer eye. And the longer an eye is, the greater risk there is for ocular pathology and conditions or diseases in the future. So those with higher levels of myopia, meaning mostly those greater than a -6 prescription, they are 40 times more likely to develop myopic maculopathy, 20 times more likely to develop retinal detachments, 5 times more likely to develop a cataract earlier in life, and 3 times more likely to develop glaucoma. So that's definitely concerning. Even if we can't totally prevent them from being myopic or totally prevent them from progressing, decreasing the endpoint will reduce the risk of ocular disease throughout life. So the lower we can keep the prescription, the better for their ocular health in the future.
So we have long known that some people, that truly myopia in certain degrees is really an ocular health or ocular disease.
Right.
In the lower levels, a little bit less likely of ocular disease, but what you're kind of illustrating is the higher levels of nearsightedness, the higher levels of myopia carry with them other side effects that are tremendously risky for right. just the overall vision in their life. Not exactly. necessarily that they're going to have that at age 6 or at age 7, but I think Dr. Gerber talked about that yes, we have an ability to compensate for the myopia mm-hmm. with glasses or contacts, but that's okay, and they're going to need those. Mm-hmm. But it's really trying to avoid the long-term morbidity or bad health-related outcomes right. later in life.
Right. We want them to have healthy eyes forever.
So, right.
So right now, yeah, we'll still have to change their glasses, or we'll still have to change their contacts, or initiate one of these treatment options that we'll discuss later. But we want to make sure that whenever they are no longer 10 years old and they're 65, that we're not seeing signs or we're not seeing conditions that are associated with the progressive nearsightedness over time.
Right, right. And this is really a long-term view, a preventative care, just right. like we always talk about. We want to protect, correct, and enhance eye care. This is really a protection factor, and it's a big one.
Right.
And it's becoming even more of a priority for us. You see our doctors in there. Kind of evolution of this as the data has been coming in, and we're really looking at international and national trends mm-hmm. saying we have got to do something about this.
Right.
This may not be something every practice is doing mm-hmm. yet, But we've been doing this for about 3 years, and we're seeing that increase on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. And that's why I'm really emphasizing this in these podcasts an awful lot, because this is more to inform the general public, make sure that, you know, if they're going to the best two optometrists in town, that happens to be at Cool Springs and Donaldson Eye Care, little plug, or other optometrists. No, I'm just kidding. There are some great optometrists, ophthalmologists in Middle Tennessee and all across the country, but you need to be talking to your eye doctor about, especially with your kids or grandkids, their risk of myopia progression and what can be done about it. And what a segue into the next question. Can we do something about it? My answer is, I know, yes. But what do we do about this? And how can we actually affect this? I mean, isn't it just genetics? It's like it is what it is. It's going to be. Not the case?
No. So there are several different things that we can do to help slow down the progression of myopia over time in children. There are two different contact lens options. There's a drop option and there's a glasses option. So we'll go through each of those a little bit more in depth here. So the first option is called the Gentle Vision Shaping System, which is abbreviated GVSS.
Kind of a euphemism. It's a term we've kind of adopted for other terms you may hear, CRT, ortho-K, things like that.
Those are the same thing as a CRT lens or an ortho-K lens, which you also might hear, at other providers or other offices, but it all means the same thing. It is basically a rigid contact lens that you put in your eye and sleep in overnight. So I know that might sound crazy to some people because we always kind of preach about don't sleep in your contacts, but this one's actually made for that. So you sleep in that lens overnight, and while you sleep, the lenses temporarily reshape the front surface of the eye or the corneal tissue, and that corrects your vision. So when you're awake the next day, whenever you wake up and you take those lenses out, you can actually see clearly that entire next day without glasses or contacts. So it's really pretty amazing. But these...
Very good for athletes, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And then also one of the side effects, if you will, of the GVSS is, you know, so one of the benefits is, geez, I wake up in the morning, I'm less dependent on my glasses or contacts. Yep. But then also... It's changing the optics of the eye, which we have learned is very influential in sending a message to the brain of should I grow the eye more or should I not? It seems to be there's some neuropathway or feedback loop typically that says keep growing, whereas by the way that these are fit, the way the optics are designed, it slows the process, right?
So in traditional glasses or contact lenses, whenever we are correcting vision, the center rays focus right on the retina. And again, that's how you see clearly. So the center rays focus directly on the macula inside the eye, but there's peripheral light rays that actually focus behind the retina. So that kind of triggers the eye to want to grow in order to reach those rays and bring them into focus also. So the way that GVSS lenses reshape that corneal tissue, it actually takes those peripheral light rays that are focused behind the retina and refocuses them in front of the retina, and it takes away the trigger for the eye to want to grow. We'll talk soon about the soft multifocal option as well, but those work in the exact same way. It's just refocusing the peripheral retinal rays to take away the trigger for eye elongation over time. So with the GVSS lenses, we see about a 40 to 50% reduction in myopia progression over time.
Versus where they would have been, right? They're still going to progress.
Right.
So we're not stopping it.
Yeah. So none of these options completely change or keep things from changing over time, but we can slow them down significantly. So if we were seeing each year that you were changing by, you know, your child was at a -2 and then they were at a -4 after 1 year, that's two whole, what we call diopters of change. So maybe if we put them in one of these options, then maybe we'd only see one diopter of change. And that adds up year after year after year. And we'll get a much, much lower prescription once things stabilize.
Which we're trying to ultimately get to the point where the eye is not going to grow anymore. Because the eye is going to grow just like, in kids, just like kids are going to grow taller and eat more food and all that. Each out of house and home and all of that. You can't stop it, right? Can't put a book on their forehead and while they sleep, anything like that. But the eye's going to do that also. But we want that to be at a normal and expected rate. That is, if you will, more aimed far away, less aimed only up close. And if it has to be up close, we want it at a lower level.
Right.
So you're talking, you know, it's interesting because when you think back, I know you recall in probably your first year year of professional education mm-hmm. in optometry that we learned about lots of studies from maybe 100 years ago. Hubel and Wiesel doing studies of suturing eyelids closed on cats. I know that's not appropriate now, but at that point they did that. But that helped them to realize that when the brain doesn't get a clear image on the retina, mm-hmm. it sends a message to continue to grow. So sutured eyes that were not getting a clear image continued to grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. And so what we're talking about now, the, if you will, the clinical data mm-hmm. is now correlating with what the theoretical laboratory research data showed a long time ago. It just takes a while in medicine to really take a big pool of patients in the real world mm-hmm. and identify what's really going on and is it changing. You know, we haven't sutured anybody's eyeballs closed, but effectively what you're saying is when you have that peripheral ray mm-hmm. or all those peripheral rays mm-hmm. that are focusing behind the retina or not in focus, that's kind of like the suturing of the eyes. Right. It sends an extra stimulus to grow more. And mm-hmm. we don't want the eye to grow more than it should, mm-hmm. right? So that's what an overnight contact lens does, with the added benefit of being able to see mostly during the day without having to wear one. But you're also doing soft lenses, mm-hmm. but those aren't overnight as much. Tell me about the soft multifocal or the nearsighted myopia soft contact lenses.
Yep. So these are just like a regular standard contact lens that you wear during the day and take out overnight. They just have what's called multifocal optics to it. So you might have, you know, some of the parents might be in these lenses for a different reason, but children who are in the multifocal optics lenses are in those lenses most of the time for myopia control. And we see that these slow down myopic progression in the same way that the GVSS lenses do, just by refocusing those peripheral light rays in front of the eye. But these slow them down by about 50 to 60%. So this can be a really good option. I would say, as far as kind of the pros and the cons between those two, I think you already touched on GVSS. Definitely the pro of that one is that you do not need glasses or contacts during the day. I would say some of the negatives of that one are that there are some parameter limits to that. So I'm a little less likely to do that option if I have a patient who's above a minus five or who has more than a diopter and a half of astigmatism correction. Sometimes your visual acuity can be a little bit compromised in patients with larger pupils in the GVSS option. You might get that a little bit in that soft multifocal option too. But with GVSS lenses, it's a much more complex fitting as well. Mm-hmm. So it usually requires a few more follow-up visits. It can sometimes be a little bit more challenging to get that fit just right. So you really have to make sure that the parents and the children are committed to that and that they understand that it's not a one time and you're done. Mm-hmm. It's a, we're going to need to see you for the fitting, for the dispensing appointment, for the day after, the week after, a month after, and just to make sure that they mm-hmm. are not surprised by that follow-up schedule. So it is a little bit more complex, more visits to the office on that one.
As I See It, we'll be right back.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Jeff Kegaris with Cool Springs and Donaldson Eye Care. We've proudly served the Middle Tennessee community for the last 26 years, and I want you to know we really appreciate you. Having an annual comprehensive eye health and vision exam is so important to the health of your eyes. From signs of diabetes, glaucoma, and cataracts, we're looking for it all. Don't let another day go by. Schedule your annual eye health and vision exam at Cool Springs or Donaldson Eye Care.
And now, back to As I See It.
I think what you're also meaning by that is mm-hmm. you need a really, really smart eye doctor like you, not me, that is involved in that. Well, really, it's somebody that's really focusing on it. No mm-hmm. pun intended, but they're really, you know, you're really digging into this mm-hmm. in such a deep degree and have that understanding that, you know, all of our doctors are aware, all of our doctors are involved, but we have one or two, you leading this, that are really delving in deep and becoming a specialist in this particular area.
Yeah, so, for GVSS especially, it's the fitting of the lenses is very important for how you're going to see throughout the day. And we want you to see as best as possible. So it's really important that those lenses are centered, that we have the right amount of correction on the eye so that not only do you see well in the morning whenever you first wake up, but even towards the end of the day, once you haven't had that lens in for 16 hours, that you're still seeing well at that mm-hmm, point. So mm-hmm. all of those things make a difference, but it is a little bit more nuanced of a fit.
So if we think about mm-hmm. this in a parallel, maybe not the exact parallel, mm-hmm. but people are very familiar with orthodontics, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And so you wear a retainer at mm-hmm. night to keep your teeth in place. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like the GVSS or mm-hmm. the overnight gas permeable contact lens, yep, right? And they become very comfortable, by the way. It's not a concern about that. Whereas the soft multifocal is at, during the day, that's more like the Invisalign during the day, right?
That's a great comparison. I tell patients all the time that the GVSS lens is just like a retainer for the eye. If you do not put that lens in every single night while you sleep, the eye will eventually go back to the normal shape. It's just a temporary correction. So you have to really wear that every night in order for you to see and for you to get that benefit of the myopia control as well. If you're only wearing it one night a week, you're not going to see well pretty much that whole week, and you're not going to get that benefit of slowing down your myopia either. So you really do have to wear it just like a retainer every single night. But I hadn't thought of the Invisalign comparison. I like that.
Free commercial, I guess, for Invisalign, right? Or whatever. So now, some of the kids that we're catching are at a very young age. Maybe parents aren't able to put a contact lens in, or maybe the patient themselves are not going to put a contact lens in, or maybe the data, no matter what age, shows that your best option is a prescription medication. What are we using there? Because I know that's pretty common also.
So there's a lot of times whenever the kids are just a little too young, their parents aren't comfortable with them being in contact lenses yet. So now we have an option that's called atropine, which is our only pharmaceutical option, but it's an eye drop that you use at nighttime before you go to sleep. So it's really very easy. You can still wear your traditional glasses that you have been wearing all along. I mean, we adjust the prescription if needed, but it's just an eye drop that we formulate for the patient that they would put in each eye once a night before they go to sleep. So that one has actually the highest level of myopia control out of the options. It controls myopia by about 60 to 65%. I would say that a lot of times it's the easiest option. It's just a drop that you put in. You don't have to worry about fitting contacts or about really changing anything that the child's doing as far as their visual correction if they're happy in their glasses. We're just adding a drop at nighttime. So I would say that some of the downfalls of that option are that sometimes that drop, because we have to do a certain concentration of it, it's not always commercially available. Like, you can't go to your regular Walgreens and pick it up all the time. So we have to kind of use an online compounding pharmacy or a local compounding pharmacy
to formulate it the way that you want. Very customized, right?
Exactly. So it might be a little bit more complicated to get it, but really that doesn't usually cause us a lot of trouble. There can be some side effects with it, but again, we're using really low concentrations of this drug, so we don't see a lot of side effects. But if we were to see side effects, we're looking at things like being a little bit more sensitive to light, sometimes pupil dilation, sometimes a little bit of blurry near vision. Those would be the main things that we're looking at. But a lot of times, even if you do experience that at first, we can either adjust the concentration of the drop and make it a little bit lower to help get rid of some of those side effects. But a lot of times those get better over time too.
And you do that a lot, from what I understand. You're not only looking pharmacologically at what level do I start this with, monitoring side effects, but now you're monitoring effectiveness.
Right.
And you can up or decrease and kind of balancing that therapeutically. That's really where it takes somebody that's dealing with this a lot to know, do we increase, do we decrease, do we stay right where we are?
Right.
You know, many people may know there are a couple of other things related to atropine, right? In the medieval times, obviously, people use that for beauty. Belladonna alkaloids, these are, because women would actually touch these plants, that's where it's derived from, and wipe it in their eyes because it was shown that, or they believed that a larger pupil was a sign of beauty. So if the pupil gets bigger, your child's going to be even more beautiful than you perceive them right now.
Just another benefit.
But in truth, now that also brings up the issue of, because we know that it dilates the pupil, in the long time ago when all we had was atropine, because it's been around forever, even well before I was practicing, it has a really strong freezing the focusing system effect too.
Yes.
And so when you talk about titrating it, we wouldn't ever use it in its full strength. It'd be effective, but that'd be a cruel thing to do because kids couldn't see up close, right?
Yep.
So you're finding a balance of the effectiveness of the drop without disrupting near focusing ability or, let's say, athletic ability, you know, pupil too large. You know, you may get a little bit of that side effect, but what people complain about in an eye health and and vision exam is more, oh, after I had those dilating drops, I can't see up close, right? Things are a little brighter, but that's when you're dilated fully and your pupil's big. I think right now we start with atropine. I'm sure in about 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, we're going to have all kinds of different drops that kind of maximize the effect and minimize the side effects. But really those side effects, you know, when we as doctors hear it, we think, oh my gosh, atropine. But the reality is they're much less than what we envision, right?
Right. So that's why we follow up regularly too. So anytime that I start a patient on atropine therapy, I'm usually seeing them a month after they start. And that's not really so much to make sure that the myopia isn't changing, because it's such a short period of time then that we probably wouldn't see a lot of change at that point anyway. But it's really to check in and make sure that they're not having side effects, make sure that I'm asking them about pupil dilation, about blurry near vision, about, you know, extensive burning or stinging whenever they put the drops in. And if they are having those things, and that's something that we need to address right away. So that's why we see them pretty much, you know, right after they start using that drop, just to check in and make sure that everything's going okay with it. So, but it is nice to have some different concentration options to play around with. Whereas if we were to see them back in 6 months and we were seeing that the prescription was still changing more than we expected it to, we could up the concentration and then monitor side effects. Whereas if we seen them at a month and they were having a lot of side effects, well, then we would decrease it a little bit and see, and then still make sure that it's working in the way that we intend it to with the myopia control.
You know, just hearing you talk about it, I already feel like I'm in good hands. Okay, I'm leaving that to you. All right, that's good. You know, early on, about 4 or 5 years ago, Dr. Koffler, an ophthalmologist out of Louisville, wrote a paper and talked about the various methods of slowing down myopia, okay? And one of those was using bifocal glasses, and he found that that had a 5% effect. And I think there were some schools for a while that felt like, you know, we need to put people in bifocals that will slow down myopia, especially if people had a tendency to overconverge. We wanted to relax the convergence, reduce the strain that caused them to overconverge, and maybe some other stimulus to have the eye grow.
Right.
One of the things we didn't know at that time, and so it wasn't a bad pursuit, it was the right direction, maybe not the right road, was that did not change those peripheral optics.
Right.
And so now companies are developing, and we're very close to seeing, right, some bifocal glasses or types of bifocal glasses that also have adjusted peripheral optics to do the same thing you're talking about with a soft contact lens multifocal or with GVSS, adjust the peripheral rays to decrease the stimulus to grow, right? Can you tell me about those? When will they be out?
Yeah, and
what do you know about them?
You're right. So traditional bifocal glasses, they are an option, but they really are only effective by slowing it down by about 10%. So it's not, you're not seeing a great benefit with that. The newer options that will probably be available sometime this year, I think. I'm pretty sure they're already available in some European countries, if I'm not mistaken. Those would work in the same way that the soft multifocal contact lenses and the GVSS lenses work. They are refocusing those peripheral light rays. I think those are called, I can't remember what the actual brand name of them is, but I think that they're called peripheral defocus spectacle lenses.
Spectacle lenses,
yeah.
Okay.
Yep, so that would be
called the Jacobs lens?
I wish. So that's something that I think we can really look forward to, because that's going to really open up what, you know, there's some patients or some parents that aren't comfortable with contacts or with drops for their children. So having a glasses option that we can easily prescribe and get for those children, I think is going to be a huge game changer.
So we start with a comprehensive eye health and vision exam at your eye doctor.
Right.
If that's us, with us. If it's not, with somebody else.
Right.
But then this issue of myopia control, one, it's well documented. You can go look very, very clearly, Brian. Holden, thank you. I almost said Harden. I'm thinking of basketball, James Harden. Brian Holden's work out of Australia, probably the seminal work on myopia control. And that would be great for parents to go ahead and research and look at. That's pretty compelling. And it's not, you know, an anecdotal. It's really looking at the world and different regions. And that's what they're dedicated to doing. So you get your exam. And then when we want to institute the possibility of myopia control, rather than just correcting it in the traditional way, we set up a myopia control consult with you here at Cool Springs or at the Donaldson office also. But especially, I think we do a little bit more in Cool Springs, but we're still doing it at Donaldson also. So what should be expected, I guess, at a myopia control consult?
So whenever you come in for that visit, we would check your prescription just like we do at your regular exam. So even if that had just been done, we would just go ahead and repeat that just to make sure that, you know, we're getting the same results still. So we'd check your prescription and then we would compare it to your past prescriptions just to see what the current rate of progression is. So if you are already myopic, we would just see how much has it changed in the last year or in the last 2 years. If you're not yet myopic, then we're just looking at where your prescription is and comparing that to those normal values that we know for that age. So we do that first. And then typically you will be dilated at that visit too, because like we talked about earlier with atropine, whenever you dilate the eye, it takes away that focusing ability. It takes that out of the equation. So we get a little bit more of an accurate assessment of the prescription level, and it gives us more of that true baseline for the patient. So we'll likely do that at the initial consult. Usually I have our technicians go ahead and run what's called a corneal topography, or it's just kind of a mapping of the surface of the eye. And that's just in case we end up doing one of the contact lens options, because that helps with the fitting or with the initial fitting of those lenses. And then lastly, we'll take what's called an axial length measurement of the eye, because that's really ultimately what we're monitoring. We want to make sure that that eye is not growing from year to year. So by taking that as the baseline, that's something that we'll monitor each year to make sure that that's staying relatively stable as well. And then once all those measurements are collected, we really just kind of sit down and have a conversation about what we're seeing with those numbers that we gathered and what the best options are for treatment, kind of talking through the pros and the cons of each option, which one we think is going to be the most effective, and then hopefully initiating something at that visit.
And so the program is starting with perhaps one or a combination of those, but it can be modified over time, right? Because sometimes you'll add drops, take away drops, do this one, I want the overnight, whatever statistically looks like it's going to do the best and work the best functionally for the child and parent.
Right.
That's
so
a very important
once
thing.
You're in our myopia control program, we do see you more regularly than maybe what you're used to. So we'll typically do, just depending on what option we're doing, probably see you at the 1 month mark, again at 6 months, and then maybe 9 months again at a year. But we're really just trying to make sure that what the option that we picked is indeed working, because there are different modifications you can make to the program. So that's what we want to know. Like we talked about earlier with atropine, we can change the concentration of that drop. Sometimes, you know, if we're at the top concentration of atropine, but we're still seeing that progression, then we can add contact lenses to it, or we can add, you know, hopefully those new bifocal glasses that we talked about. A lot of times just doing a combination therapy, if a single therapy is not working, can be beneficial.
And the name of the game is really measuring how long is the eye, right? So in addition to the topography, we're looking at that, the prescription, or what we call the refraction. And then we're also looking at the axial length.
Right.
From front to back, how long is that eye? And that's a pretty easy thing to measure now, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's just
as long as you invest in some expensive equipment, which we have,
Invest in the equipment and train your technicians.
That's right. Don't ask Dr. Jacobs or me to do it.
I may not know how to turn it on.
We can read it. We can interpret it.
I can do that.
All right. So the axial length is very important, and that's ultimately what we're going to be checking. So how long does therapy perhaps last? And is an axial length kind of an important determinant of when do we get to the point that we feel like things are more stable?
Right. So I would say this varies a lot between children, but I always tell parents, usually at least 2 years we're going to be doing this, sometimes longer. If we're seeing, you know, absolutely no progression after a couple years, then maybe we'll go ahead and stop the options if they're eager to. Sometimes patients will be eager to stop the drops. A lot of times if they're in those other contact lens options and they're not really having any trouble with them, we may just go ahead and continue those. But I'd say usually at least 2 years, most of the time maybe a little bit longer. But if there's no progression, we can usually kind of stop and monitor without those treatment options, make sure things are still stable without them. And if they are, then we can continue without them. But it's really just kind of just seeing how things progress and how, if the eye's growing or not.
Okay. So we've been talking with Dr. Amy Jacobs, who is the director of our myopia control program at Cool Springs Eye Care and Donaldson Eye Care. Amy, I really, really appreciate that. If somebody's had an eye health and vision exam, whether with us or somebody else, and they say, geez, I'm interested in setting up a myopia consult, or I'm interested in just talking with you further. First of all, it's hard to just talk with you about it unless we've got some data. So right. we really need to have that eye exam first. Mm-hmm. And ideally, if you're coming from a different office, some serial, you know, here was the prescription last year. This is the prescription this year. This right. is their age. Here's where the parents are and mm-hmm. grandparents. How many of those people are nearsighted? That right. all adds to that equation.
Yeah.
But if I want to set up a myopia control mm-hmm. consult and I have some of that information, how do we get a hold of you?
So you would call the office okay. and you can set at, tell them that you want a
what
myopia control.
What is that number?
615-771-7555.
Very good. Yep. Very good.
So I would just encourage you, even if we are getting more and more referrals for myopia control consults from outside providers, so we are mm-hmm. always able, if you just had an eye exam with somebody else who maybe isn't quite as familiar with these options or that's not something that they specialize in, we're still happy to see you. We won't have right. to repeat the entire eye exam if you just had it done. We can get those records and we can still do a myopia control consult based on your previous exams mm-hmm. too.
And I think we're very committed to working with your local eye doctor, as right. much as I tongue in cheek mm-hmm. will jest all the time about, hey, you got the best ones here. There are great eye doctors in town. They're friends of ours. We work with them closely. And so if you have on an annual basis or on an ongoing basis, if you're seeing somebody else but want to have myopia control, we will work with your existing doctor right. so that not all the visits have to be here. In fact, just the critical visits, and then we'll continue to work with your doctor at the local level mm-hmm. on a regular basis. So
exactly.
we will adjust that. Just because you have a myopia consult, if you come from another doctor, you will not become our patient for general exams. We want to keep you with your existing doctor. We really, really value and believe in the patient-doctor relationship, and we want to emphasize that. So this is a specialty practice. Within our practice, we happen to have an umbrella of the practice with a whole lot of specialties: acquired brain injury, sports vision, vision therapy, dry eye therapy, surgical care, and myopia control, just naming a few. But on the myopia control, we will oftentimes see people just from their eye doctor for consults. We'll do some of the work, and then we'll be sending them back to their regular eye doctor for monitorization. We'll do the things that maybe we have the technology to do that they need, but we want to keep you with your regular doctor.
I agree. Yeah. I think it's very easy to go ahead and start you on a therapy, go through all of those specifics with you, send you back to be monitored by your regular doctor, and you know they'll be great for monitoring you. And then if there is change, we can always correspond about what to do about mm-hmm. that.
So for more information, the best thing to do is really talk to Cole, who directs this program. That would be Cole, C-O-L-E, at coolspringseyecare.com. Ask any questions that you would like. If you want additional links to more information, please ask for that. And Dr. Jacobs will be glad to respond to yeah. you with that uh-huh. information. Call our office, 615-771-7555 for Cool Springs, or 615-889-0147 for Donaldson. We don't make those numbers say like low, near, or I don't know, something. Anyway, or coolspringseyecare.com, donaldsoneyecare.com. We've been talking with Dr. Amy Jacobs, the director of the Myopia Control Program at both offices here in Middle Tennessee. And Amy, I really appreciate you sharing your expertise and your passion for helping our kids and our grandkids become less myopic over time and protect the health of their eyes for lifetime.
Well, thank you for having me.
We'll see you next week with another edition of As I See It. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff Kegris. Thanks a lot. Have a great week.